The following is a production of the Emerson News Network.
Greetings, fellow Portlanders. From the Emerson News Network, this is Legion of News.
High atop the milk packing district in the heart of beautiful Southeast Portland, Oregon. This, my friends, is Legion of News, a one-hour distillation of all-important knowledge from everywhere. My name is Rick Emerson alongside Dawn Taylor, who is, even now as I speak these words to you, preparing information on a vast swath of happenings, including, but not limited to, the following.
Two 12-year-olds steal a van and go on a joyride. Bethany Storrow's parents apologize for the acid attack, and a feud between nuns turns ugly.
As always, my friends, have no doubt that this conglomeration of factual discourse and ideological screed will render you shocked, amazed, enraptured, and demonstrably more intelligent than when you began this hour. And now, without further ado, pay heed, for this is Legion of News.
Good afternoon, I'm Dawn Taylor, and this is absolutely everything you need to know for Monday, September 20th, 2010. Police responded Sunday morning to a report of 2 8-year-olds driving a van. The boys weren't 8, but they weren't going anywhere that they were supposed to be going.
How you doing today?
I'm great.
That's fantastic.
Just play through it.
So it was a report of 2 8-year-olds driving a van, or it was, in fact, 2 8-year-olds driving a van?
Well, actually, they were 12-year-olds.
But there was a van.
But there was a van.
They were driving.
And they were driving.
There was a report.
There was a report.
And that is all ye know, and all ye need know.
Well, actually, there's more.
Oh, all right.
That they can ye know.
Well, I stand correct.
No, ye.
Okay.
Dispatchers got a call about 8:30 a.m. from people who said they saw the children driving a white van. A responding officer saw the van fishtailing at Southeast 117th and Yamhill. The van smashed into a parked car and truck, came to a stop, and the two boys fled. After the collision, one of the boys, a 12-year-old, returned to the scene. He walked right up to me and said, "What's going on?" said Sergeant Mike Leisure. I recognized him, so I asked him if he wanted to be honest. He started to cry and said, "Yes, officer, I was in the van." Police said they know the other boy was involved. What's still a mystery is how they started the van without the keys. The van's owner, Letitia Reyes, uses it to deliver phone books. Now it's dented and the lights are smashed. "I'm not angry or anything. I'm just sad about those children,"
said Reyes. "I'm disappointed more than anything, boys.
They're way too young to be doing things like that," she said.
I'm really unclear about everything in this story. So who are the boys and what is their relation to the van?
I don't know. They're just two boys and they stole a van.
Just two?
Apparently they hotwired it or something, though, because they didn't have keys.
But I don't think you can actually do that. I think that's a thing that is no longer possible.
Maybe they did it with a... You know something, though? Some cars, are depending on the van, sometimes you can just do it with, like, a screwdriver or something.
I used to... When I had the... back when I had the 4Runner, which is a thing that I didn't necessarily announce on the air for obvious reasons, back when I had my Toyota, you could actually start it with anything that would fit into the key slot. You know, so if you had, like, a screwdriver or, like, nail clipper... But really, you could have done it with your finger if you were Karen Carpenter.
Is that why it was stolen, like, 14 times?
Well, yes. That and also... This is one of those things that they will always tell you at the shop, and then you instinctively believe that it's an urban legend. But I don't really know, you know, or if it's just like crap that people say. I would take my 4Runner in occasionally, and I would be having manly conversation with the guy who ran the joint, so I could demonstrate my masculinity. And I would say, "Well, yeah, we've had some trouble with this. Yeah, it's been stolen 5 or 6 times." And the guy would actually always do the same thing. He would hook his thumbs into his belt, and he would say, Well, you know, the deal with this particular year of 4Runner is they only make four keys for this. So, you know, if you have a 4Runner, the odds are 1 in 4 that your key will open any 4Runner of this year. Which doesn't seem like a thing that could possibly be true, but it's like every guy on Earth would tell you that about... And it's not just about my car, it's like whatever car had been stolen. So I instinctively disbelieve those statements.
I don't know, I think that's more common than you might think, though, because I remember my my friend's dad drove some kind of a silver sedan, a real popular basic silver sedan, but a really nondescript-looking car. And he was a pilot, and he got in his car at the airport. He parked it in the long-term lot while he was on a flight, and he drove home, and he got all the way home and realized it wasn't his car.
You think that you would spot that, though? I mean, that there would be some indication apart from the car itself that would indicate that it was yours?
Yeah, I don't know.
But what
people
do I know?
Keep their cars. Most people keep, or maybe not. A lot of people seem to keep their cars
tidy,
a lot more clean than I keep mine.
Well, it's sort of a Levittown thing where you just you end up in a gray sedan and you go, well, it must be mine. The key works. Yeah. I guess I'll take it home.
With me, it was like any car that I have, I would get into it and just go, this can't be my car. Where are all the toast crumbs and latte stains?
Awesome. You are listening to Legion of News right here at PDX.fm. It is Monday, September 20th, 2010, and good afternoon to you. My name is Rick Emerson alongside Don Taylor. Don't forget this program is available on your handheld device as well at mobile.pdx.fm. At mobile.pdx.fm, and it's going to be available later on today via download right here at PDX.fm or at legionofnews.com, also via iTunes as well and so forth. At the news desk, this is Don Taylor.
The parents of a woman who lied about an acid attack issued an apology, but said they still don't know why their daughter burned her face.
Crazy.
Joe and Nancy Neuwelt spoke to reporters outside their Vancouver home Friday afternoon and said they were deeply sorry for the incident involving their daughter, 28-year-old Bethany Starrow. And we have some audio of that news conference.
Is this parents?
Yeah.
All
yeah.
right. Okay. This is...
This should be the father.
Any good parent would. We stood by our daughter when... She told us these different scenarios. We stood by her. We believed her. Any good parent would do that. So that's the course we took. Up till yesterday, we believed her fully. There was no reason to doubt her at all. We will lean on our faith and our family and our friends and our community to get our daughter the medical attention that she needs and the counseling that she deserves.
All right. There we go.
I have a problem when the guy says that, like any good parent, we believed her through all the different scenarios that she told us.
Yeah, it seems like there's really only the one. It's sort of a binary proposition. Either the acid got thrown on you by somebody else or it did not. I don't... Parsing that particular statement didn't really seem to underscore the truthful nature of it.
On Thursday, Vancouver police said Sturrow admitted she was not attacked by a stranger on August 30th, as she reported, and that her burns were self-inflicted. Investigators said the confession followed a Thursday morning search of the Neuwelt's home where Sturrow lives. Nancy Neuwelt, Sturrow's mother, said she's baffled why her daughter would purposely injure herself and then fabricate the attack. There were no signs. We don't know why at this point. We hope the medical community can find answers.
I don't think it's the medical community you want to be talking. I think you're dealing with the wrong branch of science there.
And here we have audio from the mom from that same press conference.
And we also acknowledge that there was hurt and betrayal to the communities involved, and we want to apologize for that. Bethany is extremely sorry for the pain to her friends, family, co-workers at Safeway, her friends at Anytime Fitness in Vancouver.
Apparently there's paid product placements in their,
awesome. They've got
their press conference.
They've got
but
a sponsored press conference.
Because the truth has been revealed.
That's wonderful. I'm surprised that somebody hasn't started doing that before now. Where somebody gets a little paid mention in there. Somebody, look, can we get third-party sponsorship of this? Is there any sort of law prohibiting that? No? That's fantastic. Contact Bally's now.
We're hoping the kidnapper will bring our child home safely and that our child will still be wearing the Adidas athletic shoes that he was wearing when he was abducted?
I'm going to be comforting myself inside with brand new Coors Blue that, in fact, will let you know that it's achieved the proper temperature by the color change on the label. Coors Blue, drink fresh or don't drink at all. Oh, that's awesome. All right. Isn't the chick, I was going to ask, first of all, why she has a different last name, but I guess maybe the mom remarried or something, because she's not married, like the acid girl.
I don't know.
She herself isn't married, although girls like that always do tend to be married. Tend to be married to some guy who then claims later on, like, I never knew she was crazy, which is always a lie, by the way.
And then they do something to get attention, like, I don't know. Throw acid in their own face.
Well, as somebody said on a message, but this is not me saying this. This is somebody who said this on the Facebook. Is that, you know, she's like half deaf, so was she not getting enough attention for that already? This is not me, of course. Yeah. I'm just passing that along.
And she was a nice-looking girl, but she was a nice-looking girl in that kind of...
acid-y,
you know,
way.
Going to Cabo and taking pictures of herself with her top off and sending it to her friends on her phone in that kind of a way.
Look, we're all drinking Cosmos at the same time.
All right. Yeah. Not to be judgmental, because God knows I'm not.
I don't think I've actually. The only picture I've seen of her is where she's all. She looks like Norberg from The Naked Gun, where she's all swabbed up. That's it. Like it, or that guy in Catch 22 who just sits there, like, you know, just swaddled in bandages and can't be seen at all. So I'm not really sure exactly what she looked like. I mean, she was Vancouver, though, so we can draw your own conclusions there. Here's Don Taylor at the Legion of News news desk.
Well, I was just going to ask you about that. Never mind.
I understand that no one knows what Don is referring to right now.
Yay.
That's okay. Here's Don Taylor.
Two groups of nuns in Spokane Valley are feuding over accusations of stolen cash and silver, forged business records, and slander. The Spokesman Review reports that the dispute has resulted in a police investigation at the request of the Missionary Sisters of the Holy Ghost. They allege that two members of their convent left, but not before stealing the items and turning them over to a rival convent at Mount St. Michael. The convents are affiliated with different breakaway sects of the Catholic Church. The Reverend Mother of the Missionary Sisters contends that leaders at Mount St. Michael have been using stolen files to spread false rumors about her order. The head of the Sisters of Mary Immaculate Queen at Mount St. Michael says the allegations are totally unfounded, and she doesn't understand why the Missionary Sisters are making them.
Does this whole thing have to be set up with a rumble of the gym later on, only to be broken up by John Aston or something?
I hope so.
That's fantastic.
I would love to see just fisticuffs between nuns.
Or just where the rosary comes out as some sort of like a... One of those things that the ninjas are always... Where it's like they throw them... It's like a rope or a chain with like a sort of ball, like a weight at each end. But I guess they used
in Kill Bill.
Exactly, but it's sort of like what they use to wrap up the feet, like a calves or whatever at the rodeo, where they throw them and it just goes around your ankles.
Bolos.
I want to say that. Is that right?
Well, that's what the cowboys call
But that's
them.
Not what the ninja folk have.
No, the ninja called them something else.
Anyway, but I'm just sort of seeing a nun, you kind of just, you know, and then the obligatory crucifix that is in fact like a whooshing, like a sword. And then it becomes like a whole Jet Sharks, meets Anchorman kind of a thing.
I'm just fascinated by the idea that there's rival groups of nuns. And that there's something in, like, their personal records that could be used to, like, slander the other nuns.
Yeah, well, every nun that I don't want to just paint with a broad brush here, but I will say that the majority of nuns that I knew in my life, they did all seem a little unhinged to one degree or another. I mean, I know that it's easy to sort of poke at priests because they've had a bit of the last few years, some controversy happening. The priests, in my experience that I knew, they were simply... I mean, they were just drunk all the time. That was their thing, is they just reeked of, like, cigarettes and gin. So they just seemed like... They just seemed like sort of, like your typical sad, broken-down, like, 50-something suburban guy who just happened to be a priest, but spent a lot of time, like, Roger Sterling just staring into in the distance, like, wondering what happened to their life. Whereas the nuns were flat-out, like, nuts. I mean, they just seemed bonkers.
Yeah, see, I'm the first generation... a female in my line to not go to Catholic school. So I grew up just hearing the stories of Catholic school. And I swear to God, to listen to my mother tell it, the nuns were like 8 feet tall and breathed fire.
Yeah.
And would just, you know, whip out these like police batons and just beat you half senseless for like chewing gum.
Well, it didn't happen to me so much as it had happened to a, when I went to Catholic school, they didn't really knock us around all that much. We did get the, they had the thing with the ruler and the whatever, but it wasn't like they were just beating on you. Not unless you really, really asked for it, as did my friend Tim when we were in about third grade, where I remember seeing a nun take him out in the hallway, and she was giving him what for, where she's like jabbing the finger in his chest and like, you know, the whole like, and another thing, young man, I'll tell you. And he apparently said, we could just see it through the little window in the door. We couldn't really hear what was going on. Apparently he said something she didn't like because she didn't hit him as such, but she had him sort of standing up against this brick wall in the hallway, and she was talking to him, and he opened his mouth and gave her what I imagine they used to call a little bit of lip, and like with the heel of her hand, she just kind of went bam and just hit him in the forehead, and then his head kind of went like back into the wall. So it was sort of a like a ricochet sort of punch, which was sort of great. Not that teachers were above occasionally walloping a kid, but that was usually one of the male teachers. That wasn't usually the nuns. They were just sort of creepy and scary though, because they seemed completely not even masculine, just sort of like weird and sexless. They all had skin like a walnut too. I mean, they were just they just didn't even look human. All right,
here's Don Taylor.
All right,
I'm over it now though.
A 22-year-old man's body was found on railroad tracks around 6:50 a.m. Sunday, according to Camas police. The discovery was made in the area of 6th Avenue and Franklin Street. Police believe a westbound train hit and killed the man sometime in the overnight hours. The Washougal River runs through the area, and it's a popular spot for fishermen, who said countless people crossed the train tracks in both broad daylight and at night. Camas police have not released the identity of the man hit and killed by the train. They are continuing to investigate. The Associated Press reports that Christine O'Donnell, speaking at a GOP event in Delaware on Sunday, made light of the controversy swirling around her witchcraft remarks in 1999. During appearance Sunday at the GOP picnic in southern Delaware, and I'm not sure what we have of sound of this.
We have, well...
Because you gave me...
Do you have the actual sound from of what she said back on Politically Incorrect?
Well, yeah, let's do that first.
And then there's a couple cuts of, I think, Karl Rove talking about how she's she's going to bring shame and disorder on their house.
This is Bill Maher on his current show, Real Time, talking about how he's had her on the show some 22 times. And,
I didn't know it was 22. I thought it was just like a couple times back in the 90s. I didn't know it was that often.
He had her on a whole bunch of times, and he's got a lot of clips, or at least he has a number of clips from her appearances.
I hadn't even heard of her before this whole thing. I mean, I wasn't even aware that she existed. But as soon as this whole thing, as soon as the upset in Delaware happened, so Maher, I guess it was on the heels of that clip from MTV where she was talking about leading the anti-masturbation squad or whatever, SALT, yeah, or whatever they were called. And so Maher came out with this thing that he's got the clip of her, which I guess is the one he's already played, where she was talking about how she dabbled in witchcraft.
Yeah.
And then he said he was just going to start playing like a clip a week until she agreed to come back on the show.
Well, yeah, and that's what this is.
All right, so this is Bill Maher.
let me share a clip from Politically Incorrect, because since Christine O'Donnell, who, by the way, I think could do even better than Sarah Palin, because Sarah Palin is mean and Christine is not. She's nice, and I have the proof. I have 22 episodes. Christine, if you're watching, I created you. You need to come on this show. If you don't come on this show, I'm going to show a clip every week. I'm the only one who has them. I hoarded them. No, somebody had one. They showed it on the internet this week on YouTube of her on with Eddie Izzard when she is saying, she's saying, you can never lie. And Eddie Izzard said, what if you were hiding Anne Frank in the attic and Hitler came to the door? And she said, nope, wouldn't lie. Let me show this clip. This is from Politically Incorrect. I don't know what year, like 1997 or something.
Dangerous.
You were a witch.
I dabbled into witchcraft. I never joined a coven.
Wait a minute.
Did.
You were a witch?
Yeah, she was a witch.
You were a witch?
Coven. I didn't join a coven. Let's get this
wait a minute. I love this. No, you're a witch. You're going Halloween's bit.
I was a witch.
I mean, wait a minute.
That's exactly why.
How are you to be a witch?
Because I dabbled into witchcraft. I hung around people who were doing these things.
Having fun?
I'm not making this stuff up. I know what they told me they do.
Well, what they do?
I mean, one of my first dates with a witch was on a satanic altar, and I didn't know it. And I mean, there's little blood and stuff like that.
That was a date? Your first date was a satanic altar?
Yeah, we went to a movie and then like had a little midnight picnic.
Let's have a movie and a sacrifice.
That's fantastic.
What was What was going on with the hair in the 90s? I think it's the,
that
it's
was
the,
a bad,
it's the main,
bad hair yeah. era.
Well, she was
a good witch.
No,
yeah.
look, I'm just saying, witch. Christine, it's like a hostage crisis. Every week you don't show up, I'm gonna throw another body out.
So how long ago was the thing where she was talking about going on the date to the satanic
that
satanic
clip
altar?
Was from 1999.
So that was in the relatively recent past. It wasn't like it was back in 1992
like 11 years
or something.
Ago. But
yeah, but I mean, it wasn't. But it was when, well, I guess that is 11 years ago. But I was thinking it was somehow... I was thinking it was somehow in the early 90s, back when it was not considered all that crazy to talk about, you know, how Satan was roaming through the suburbs looking for your youths. You know, because that was more or less an 80s thing. The apex of the Satan scare in America was in the 80s, but then it trailed off gradually throughout the early 90s. By 1999, I mean, 1999, I was already in Portland, so... you know, I'm trying to sort of place where we were culturally at that point, but it doesn't seem like that was a thing that most people, even Republicans running for something, were talking about. All right. Well, they're going to play that like 700,000 times. That's fantastic.
Well, anyway, former Bush administration advisor Karl Rove told Fox News Sunday that Karl Rove, who is just trying to bury her before she gets any further, he wants so badly to just like not have her go any further. He's like leading the Republican charge to just sabotage her. He went on Fox News Sunday and said she can't ignore this problem.
Let's see.
I frankly think she made a smart decision by not getting on the Sunday shows this week. She shouldn't have accepted in the first place. But, you know, she needs to talk to the people of Delaware.
So this is the weird thing about Karl Rove is that he went on after she won in Delaware. He went on and he made the observation. He said that it was bad for the Republican Party and he thought that she was a lightweight and whatever. And then somebody must have got him in a room somewhere or somebody made the right phone call to him. Because then the next thing I saw, he was on television retracting all of that and saying that he was, in fact, a big supporter and that he was and that he had just donated money to her campaign. And then the next time I saw him, he was talking about how, you know, that she had to get her house in order because she was going to ruin everything. And, that, you know, she had to start showing up and she couldn't miss any more of the shows. And he understood why she was going to do it, why she was skipping programs, why she would do that. But that she had to fix that because otherwise she was just going to get toasted. So somebody, Karl Rove himself, it seems like there are different factions warring for the soul of Karl Rove.
Well,
this.
Don't you wish you could be privy to what's actually going on behind the scenes of the Republican Party right now? Because she's a nightmare. She's a train wreck. She's a tea partier. She is totally not the face that the mainstream Republicans want to put on the party. And yet she's been successful to a certain extent. And now it's like that whole, it's like the Sarah Palin thing. It's like, now we're stuck with her. Oh, God, can we make her go away? Oh, but if I come out against her publicly and she wins, I'm screwed.
Well, it was after the debate maybe with Joe Biden, maybe leading up to the debate with Joe Biden, where Peggy Noonan, who was a speechwriter for President Reagan and who's a news analyst now for CNN and who's the very strident right-wing Republican, she had one of those great moments where she forgot her mic was on. And here's the thing, just a little FYI for me to you kids, the mic is always on. The mic is always on. The camera is always running. If you think the phone call isn't being tapped, it is. Somebody is recording everything you do. So just, you know, word to the wise. So Peggy Noonan, of course, was doing the show on CNN. They go to break, or so she thought, and she continued to talk about Sarah Palin, and she referred to her as just being kind of, you know, she said, oh, it's just a lot of BS that they're trying to shove this Palin woman on us. I mean, she got the brain of a gnat or whatever. Words very similar to that. She was just talking about Sarah Palin had a brain like a kidney bean. And same thing. Somebody heard it. Somebody recorded it. And then the next thing you saw was Peggy Noonan on television giving a bunch of mea culpas about, no, I'm a huge supporter of Sarah Palin. I'm a big fan. I think she's going to do great things for the party. So there are obviously different factions sort of pulling various behind-the-scenes strings. As you said, just like, you know, like in this case, where they're trying to... Somebody is arguing with somebody else about who is going to be the new face of the Republican Party. It's awesome.
Rove also told Fox News Sunday that O'Donnell will have to address Delaware voters about this at some point.
In southern Delaware, where there are a lot of church-going people, they're probably going to want to know what was that all about. And again, she said it on television when she went on the Bill Maher show. And my view is she can't simply ignore it. She's got to deal with it and explain it and put it in its most sympathetic light and move on.
You know, it's almost hard to believe that people don't take us seriously as a republic when we're arguing about whether or not one of our potential representatives in fact, went on a date to a satanic church where there was blood on the satanic altar.
I'm not sure exactly what it is she's supposed to address here. That, yes, she actually did dabble in witchcraft when she was a teenager, which is just idiotic. Or if she's supposed to address the fact that she said something idiotic when she was on Bill Maher.
I want to know where she went on the date that she construed it to be a satanic altar. That's what I want to know. I want to know where the guy actually took her that in her mind's eye was, in fact, what a black mass looked like. You know? Like if it was just like a Carl's Jr. or something where they hadn't cleaned up in a while or just, you know, it was
like a dumpster behind the Del Taco.
Yeah, it was like there was some sort of a janitorial strike or something going on. It's like, you know, and they hadn't really sponged off the table at the local Sherry's all that well. And, you know, and he's like, I'm sorry. I mean, it's just terrible here. I mean, it looks like a satanic church. I know, but it's really just, I'll clean it up.
Hold on a second. Blah, 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 satanic, blah, blah.
And it's also not like, look, maybe I'm not as well versed in the ways of satanic mass as some, but it seems like that's also not just a thing, you know, that you're driving along with the guy and he's taking you out on the date and first you're at a movie and then you stop at Carvel's to get some ice cream and then ho, here I am at a satanic church. I mean, you've got to drive to that place, I would imagine. And then there's the thing where the guy opens the little eye hole and he says, "What is the password?" And you say, "Levay," and then he lets you in. You know what I mean? It's not like he can really spring that on you. Wouldn't you ask at some point, like, where are we going? And he either says, it's a surprise. And then you just find yourself like in an increasingly creepy series of dark corners. Or he says, satanic church. And you say, no, I'd rather go home. Thank you.
Well, I also want to know when exactly this was that she was hanging out with people who were dabbling in the black arts. Was this before, during, or after she was spearheading the high school campaign against masturbation?
That's a good question, Don Taylor. Perhaps you wanted to see, perhaps it was a sort of investigation of that activity. Mm. Because, of course, that is the, you know, it's
maybe
the work
she
was of the
so,
devil.
She was so scared by the witches that it put her off orgasms.
Okay.
I don't know.
You're listening to a Legion of News right here at PDX.FM. At PDX.FM, don't forget the program is available via iTunes later on today. And it's a direct download here at PDX.FM or at LegionofNews.com. It is made possible by, among other folks, Mr. Michael Beatty. He is the proprietor of The Cleaning Solution. 971-533-3211 is how you can find out more about his fine business. 971-533-3211. If you find yourself walking into work one day or walking into home and you realize that either something has stained or soiled the carpet and you didn't quite notice it, maybe you got it.
Keep doing your ad. Keep maybe doing your little commercial over there.
Maybe somebody is opening a flask across the table from you in the studio, and then later on they're reeling drunkenly around the room, emptying their breakfast onto the floor, and you find that that's a thing you don't necessarily want staying in the carpet. You can contact Michael Beatty at 971-533-3211. Or as we head into fall, I mean, because there's different kinds of dirt and filth and whatever that'll get into your house. You know, during the summer, if you're at the park, you've got grass clippings and grass stain that comes in. You know, you're out at the river, engaging in some sort of strenuous athletic activity to increase family bonding.
You're having a satanic ritual.
You're having a satanic mass at your home. You're just tracking stuff in from the outdoors, and then of course once wintertime comes around, then it's just like snow and ice being brought in, and everything gets all beaten down, that gray kind of sheen to it. You just get that taken care of. The carpet stays looking just as good as it did the day you bought it. 971-533-3211. This is Don Taylor.
Do you want to say something about that? Would you like to address the fact that I was just
no? We're out of Kahlua, so I mean, I know you gotta make your own fun over there.
Okay, thank you.
Here's Don Taylor at the Legion of News news desk.
An American-born panda gave birth to her eighth cub in southwest China. A rare... I got all side-swiped with the doctoring my visa. Let's do some science news.
All right, here's science on the march for Monday right here at Legion of News.
An American-born panda gave birth to her eighth cub in southwest China, a rare accomplishment for the endangered species known for being poor breeders. Hua Mei gave birth to a male cub at 3 a.m. on Friday at the Wolong China Giant Panda Research Center in the Sichuan province, the official Xinhua news agency said Friday. The cub weighed 5.7 ounces at birth. This brings the number of panda births at the Wolong Center to 16 this year, equal to last year's total. Kwame, whose name means China America, was the first giant panda cub born in the United States in 1999 at the San Diego Zoo after a decade of failed breeding attempts. She returned to China in 2003 and now has 8 cubs, including 3 sets of twins.
So what is the deal? Are there no pandas in the wild or something? Where do wild pandas live, first of all?
Well, pandas, they live in Asia, and they are... Their habitats are all being destroyed.
I mean, if you just wandered through the woods somewhere, would you find them? Because if you were to ask me where pandas live, I would say, at the zoo. Because that's the only place... That is the only place I have ever even heard of a panda existing. Like, no one has ever said, pandas, which live here, and then they click to a picture of the Serengeti Plain, or, you know, wherever.
They live in mountainous regions in Asia, right. In, like, China, Southeast Asia.
Do they just not breed in the wild? Have they just opted
they
out of that? Are they, like, shakers?
Well, they breed to a certain extent in the wild, but the thing is that they are endangered, and their habitat is increasingly endangered. It's shrinking. And getting smaller and smaller. And they do get hunted as well. So that's one reason why we try to breed them in captivity. But the big problem, the big reason it's a big deal is that we've had pandas in zoos and research centers and stuff for years. They don't like to breed in captivity as a rule. They're not fond of it.
They're not really exhibitionist in that way?
No. It's always been quite a challenge to the point where they've done things like showing the pandas like porn and things like that to try and get them in the mood. And pandas will have none of it.
Didn't it seem like hunting pandas is a thing that's almost certain to bring you bad karma?
I would think
so. It's like hunting a Hello Kitty.
Yeah.
You know?
Some things you just shouldn't shoot in the face.
Some guy with a high-powered rifle going after Choco Kitty through the undergrowth.
Females in the wild normally have a cub once every 2 or 3 years. The fertility of captive giant pandas is even lower. So that's the thing is, they are endangered, and also they have a very low reproductive rate as well, normally. So go pandas, go!
That's the official sentiment here at Legion of News.
NASA's Inspector General is criticizing the head of the space agency for his contact with an oil company. NASA Administrator Charles Bolden is former board member of Marathon Oil Corporation and remains a major stockholder. He contacted a senior Marathon official in April seeking advice about an alternative fuel project that NASA was considering. On Monday, the Inspector General concluded that Bolden's contact with the oil company did not violate federal laws or ethics regulations, but the Inspector General found that the telephone call by Bolden was inconsistent with the ethics pledge that he signed upon taking office last year.
And was made near the Flagon with the Dragon.
Bolden has since acknowledged his action was inappropriate. He has recused himself from the fuel project and received some refresher ethics training.
I didn't want to do that, but there's nothing that rhymes with project. I mean, I was trying to do a whole project. Danny Kaye, Walter Slezar kind of a thing there, but I just couldn't.
No, nothing.
See, that's what I'm saying. It's like, and I couldn't
think of anything that rhymes with project.
And I couldn't not do it. It's like a full-on Pavlov response when I hear Inspector General. I just have to.
I can see that.
All right.
The well that spewed millions of gallons of oil into the Gulf of Mexico is finally dead, but residents will be feeling the pain for years to come. A permanent cement plug sealed BP's well nearly 2.5 miles below the seafloor, 5 agonizing months after an explosion sank a drilling rig and led to the worst offshore oil spill in U.S. history. Retired Coast Guard Admiral Thad Allen, the federal government's point man on the disaster, and one of our favorite soundbite people.
You want to talk about a guy who just regrets the day he ever answered the phone. And I mean, Thad, we got a great job for you, pal. We have a fantastic opportunity. You are going to love this. It's working for BP.
That'll be great, he said.
What could go wrong?
He said Sunday that BP's well is effectively dead and posed no further threat to the Gulf. Allen said a pressure test to ensure the cement plug would hold was completed at 5:54 a.m.
You know, here's the thing about this is I think it would be a lot more believable if he didn't sound like every guy at the end of every science fiction movie made in the 80s where he, you know, would look at the camera and say, "And the danger is at last gone. There is nothing more to fear." And then they just do the slow dissolve to the bottom of the ocean where you see the cement breaking apart and then the glowing eyes coming back out.
Or actually just go below the surface and see all of the oil that's still in the ocean and the shrimpers who can't sell their shrimp.
I'm not even really sure you need to go below the ocean to see that. You could probably just go to the store.
Yeah, and the empty motels that do not have tourists in them. So, yeah. But it's all better now. That's the end of our science news.
There you go. There's a Science on the March for Monday right here at Legion of News. Here's Don Taylor at the news desk.
One member of an outlaw motorcycle gang was shot and killed, and another one wounded Saturday night in Cincinnati in a shootout with police. Oh, we don't need the science news
you
anymore,
really
since
think
I said there was no more science news.
Yeah, I was just all distracted by the fact that there's a motorcycle gang that's rampaging through Cincinnati. You don't really think of Cincinnati as being one of your more high crime areas.
It's supposed to be one of the most beautiful cities in the United States, by the way.
Except for the killing.
Cincinnati. You wouldn't think Ohio, though. Really
no.
Beautiful. But Cincinnati has apparently the most fountains per capita of any city in the United States.
Is that really what qualifies it for most beautiful status?
I don't know, but it's also supposed to be just a lovely city. I was looking for somewhere to move a long time ago when I was still living in L.A., and I was considering Portland, and I was considering a couple of other places, and I said, where are supposed to be good places to live? And apparently Cincinnati is awesome.
Now, this would have been some time ago, so where is it that you obtained this? It wasn't like you could go online, so would you just, like, ask around?
Yes, I could go online. This wasn't like the 1800s.
When did you move here?
1990.
Okay, so you were... So you were asking the two other people on the internet, hey, where should I move? And one of them happened to say Cincinnati, and so therefore you had a 50% vote.
So you might be surprised to know that there was actually quite a bit of internet already in place in 1990.
Yeah, but it was just a guy sitting there making ASCII out of a boob. I mean, that's all it was. I mean, it was just three guys. You can almost see the areola. It needs more definition.
Anyway.
Quick, log out of Pine. Someone's coming.
Yes, and then me and Fatboy Roberts arguing about movies
totally.
With people on Usenet.
Seriously, and somebody calling another guy Hitler. Nazi!
One member of an outlaw motorcycle gang was shot and killed and another one wounded Saturday night in Cincinnati in a shootout with police. Chief Tom Stryker says two officers were also shot.
Here's the thing. I don't really know what else he does apart from appearing in news bites on this program, but I like Chief Tom Stryker just because he sounds like a guy who could get things done, you know? Sounds like a man who could really crack some skulls when it needed to be done.
We have had two officers shot. Their condition is that they are stable at University Hospital at this point. There were also two people from the Iron Horsemen that were shot.
Yeah, the Iron Horsemen, I'm assuming that's one of the
That would be the gang?
The bands of merrymakers. All right.
Stryker says several officers involved in the Vice Squad investigation were shot when they arrived at the bar.
The SWAT team has been called in. The outside perimeter of the building is secure. We have four or five members of the Iron Horsemen in custody at this time.
You know, if I was that guy, I would just be standing around the office. I wouldn't even want my own office or a door or anything. I would want to stand in the middle of the office near my desk all the time. Just go so when the phone, I'd answer phones that weren't even mine. Just like a Stryker, you know, just
what
say
a
it.
What great name is that?
Loud, stentorian sort of a voice. Awesome. All right. Well, there you go. Speaking of which, we have coming up later on today, probably not in this hour, probably in the Rick Emerson Show. We have some sound from Mr. Ron Perlman of Sons of Anarchy, which you are now watching.
I am indeed.
Excellent. You are going to be a better person for watching it. The first season is great. Second season, even better.
I have happy news.
What sort of happy news is this?
It has a dog.
All right. Here's your happy news. This is Don Taylor at the Legion of News News Desk.
A San Diego golden retriever that surfs for charity is one of five really good dogs being honored nationally by the American Kennel Club. Winners of the AKC Humane Fund Awards for Canine Excellence were announced Thursday in New York City. The winners will receive $1,000 awards on December 5th in Long Beach, California. Ricochet was trained to be a service dog for a person with a disability, but she turned out to be too interested in chasing prey for that role. The two-year-old female showed she could surf, winning third place in the 2009 Purina Incredible Dog Challenge. Now, she often surfs with disabled surfers, including a quadriplegic teenager and a six-year-old boy with a brain injury.
Wow.
Ricochet helps balance the board to keep them from falling off and helps them to feel excitement instead of fear.
There you go.
There's a picture of Ricochet surfing.
Okay, that is actually pretty adorable. There we go. There's your happy news with Dawn Taylor. Don't forget, this program is available via iTunes later on today. You can also download it as a direct MP3 file right here at pdx.fm or legionofnews.com. The Rick Emerson Show comes up at 1 o'clock at rickemerson.com. Today we have Corpse Watch, also a Geek Watch coming up later on today. The Week in Geek from Mr. Aaron Duran, Top 5 and so forth, plus our Mad Men recap, last night's Mad Men episode. This is Dawn Taylor.
A Salem City dump truck driver and an adult care home resident were hurt when a dump truck careened off a hill and crashed into the house. The Statesman Journal said neither of the men suffered serious injuries in the Thursday accident in West Salem. Police Corporal Jim Welsh said the truck, which was pulling a portable toilet on a trailer, passed a dead-end barrier, then went down the 75-foot hill into the adult care home. The driver was 43-year-old Gordon Williams, and the medical problem may have caused the crash. Four adults live at the privately owned home, which was badly damaged.
Yes, yes, I would imagine it was.
An animal rights group recognized Clackamas County firefighters for their efforts to save a camel stuck in a sinkhole. PETA officials said they plan to give the Clackamas Fire District the Compassionate Fire Department Award, a framed certificate and letter of appreciation. Earlier this week, rescue crews dug a 1,500-pound camel out of a 7-foot sinkhole in Oregon City. Firefighters worked for several hours to free the pet, named Moses.
You know, my whole thing is how did the camel... I'm not talking about how did it get down in the hole. I'm like, did you say it was in Oregon City or was it in...
Yeah, Oregon City.
So how did it get to Oregon City is my question. First of all, I don't really know what a baby camel looks like. I imagine it's just like a regular camel, but smaller. But
I think that's an adult camel if it weighs 1,500 pounds.
I understand that it's an adult camel. What I'm saying is, I don't really understand how the camel got to be in Oregon City.
So you think it had to be really tiny to be shipped to Oregon City because a big camel couldn't be transported?
I'm saying I'm not going to put a full camel on a plane, and probably no one is. So my thing is there a camel breeding operation happening near Oregon City that we don't know about? Like, look, if I just told you, look, hey, a friend of mine's got a camel in England. I need it here next week. Take care of that. Are you going
to
do that?
Do you think that all camels are in other countries and have to be transported here fully grown?
I'm saying this doesn't seem like their native environment, which I think is probably true.
This is not the llama's native environment either, and we are like chock-a-block full of llamas.
Yeah, but they're smaller than camels, is my point. Camels are what we call very, very big. That's the scientific term for those. I'm just wondering where it is, where it is that they live. Llamas, there are actual like llama farms around here. Are there camel farms? I'm not saying there aren't. No, don't. That just
You want to know, and you see, and I'm fascinated though by the fact that you seem to think that camels can only be transported.
That's
fully grown.
That's a drastic revision of the text. All right, here's Don Taylor.
I'm sorry. The Oregon State Police got a little help from the Marines when a man involved in a hit-and-run injury crash tried to flee on foot. Troopers said 26-year-old Christopher Lee Cox of La Grande crashed his station wagon into the back of another station wagon Friday afternoon at an on-ramp to Interstate 205, causing minor injuries to the driver of the other vehicle. Cox got out of his vehicle and took off running before two men, later identified as Marines in civilian clothes, chased him down in a grassy area and detained him until troopers and Clackamas County Sheriff's deputies arrived. State police did not release the names of the Marines. Cox was charged with driving under the influence, hit and run, assault, recklessly endangering, and attempting to elude. He was released on his own recognizance Saturday morning.
You are listening to Legion of News right here at PDX.fm, and it's also available as a download at legionofnews.com or via iTunes later on. If you are listening to the Rick Emerson program, it is because you are a subscriber. If you are listening to the Rick Emerson show from 1 o'clock to 3 o'clock at rickemerson.com, you are paying the low cost of just 32 cents a day. If you are not subscribing to the Rick Emerson show, you can do so at rickemerson.com, or you can become a recipient of the Emerson Grant. How might you do that, you ask? Now, I'm here to tell you that in partnership with our friends at New Millennium Maintenance, the Emerson Grant is giving 10 people each month a one-month subscription to the Rick Emerson Show. Here's how you qualify for your chance at that. You call this number, 503-505-6964, 503-505-6964. You leave us a voicemail of no more than 2 minutes in length explaining why you or somebody you know should have a one-month membership to the Rick Emerson program, and you will be put in the pile of folks from whom we will draw those 10 names every month. You can also send us a YouTube video if you prefer. That is to video@rickemerson.com. And so, again, 10 people each month will be given a one-month subscription to the Rick Emerson Cavalcade of Whimsy, courtesy of our good friends at New Millennium Maintenance. That is the Emerson Grant. Here is Don Taylor.
A member of the Vancouver City Council may face an ethics probe after shouting at a private citizen during a recent council meeting and also telling her fellow council members to shut up. Jeannie Harris argued with the citizen over freedom of speech and the proposed new interstate bridge during last Monday's meeting. Harris then got into an argument with Jean Stewart, one of her colleagues on the council, and Stewart told her she needed to go settle down. Her outburst was videotaped and then posted on YouTube. From there, it quickly spread virally, As of early Monday morning, the video clip had already been viewed more than 14,000 times.
That's fantastic. This is like back to our earlier point of everything you do being videotaped or filmed and the camera always being on and the phone always being tapped. Anytime you shout at somebody else or scream at somebody else or say anything that upon reflection was ill-advised, that'll be like a Vimeo clip within 14 seconds. Here's Don Taylor.
Let's do our entertainment news.
Here's your entertainment news for Monday right here at PDX.fm.
Actress Kelly McGillis has been joined in a civil union with her girlfriend in New Jersey. McGillis and Melanie Lay's civil union was performed in municipal court in Collingswood on September 15th. McGillis, 53, starred in the movies Witness, Top Gun, and The Accused in the 1980s. Her civil union partner is an executive with Independence Communications, a company that provides Muzak to businesses. The New York Times first reported their civil union. McGillis, who lives in Collingswood, came out as a lesbian last year in an interview with SheWired.com. She's been married and divorced twice before and has two daughters.
Boy, and she has never looked more like a softball coach. If you look up a picture of Kelly McGillis right now, so it's like somebody has replaced her hair with steel wool, first of all. And she looks like she could punch through a brick wall. I mean, she looks... It really is staggering. I never would have... It's not even that she's gotten older. It's like I never would have guessed that that was Kelly McGillis at any point in time.
Really? Now I want to go look her up. So does she look powerful?
Maybe
or does she look just kind of...
No, she just looks unbelievably butch. I mean, yeah. I mean, she really looks like she ought to be behind the wheel of a Kenworth.
Oh, I see what you mean.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Doesn't she look like she ought to be, giving somebody her 10-4, while sitting in the cab of a Peterbilt?
I will say, though, there is one sort of glamour shot of her where
really?
She's a little bit dolled up and she's got the short hair and everything, and actually she looks kind of awesome.
Well, behold the power of airbrushing. I'm not saying she's an unattractive woman. I suppose she has now entered the realm of what we might call being a handsome woman in her better moments.
Russell Brand has been arrested following an altercation with a photographer, police in Los Angeles have said. The 35-year-old comedian was taken into custody at Los Angeles International Airport for a misdemeanor charge of simple battery. The victim, a paparazzo who was not identified, placed Brand under citizen's arrest. The alleged attack was first reported by TMZ, which posted video of the altercation. It occurred as Brand as his fiancée, singer Katy Perry, were surrounded by paparazzi as they entered the terminal that houses Delta Airlines. Brand has made no comment about the incident. Shortly after, Perry tweeted, "If you cross the line and try to put a lens up my dress, my fiancée will do his job and protect me."
Well, that does seem reasonable.
I think so. I don't have a lot of sympathy when I hear that these things involve somebody punching a photographer, frankly. Sons of Anarchy, which co-stars Ron Perlman, has just started its third season. And though the FX program centers on a murdering, gun-selling bike gang, Perlman sees the Sons as a group with a strict moral code. Perlman talks about the flawed but good gang members.
These guys are fighting for the life that they envision for themselves. And they have an incredibly well articulated code of values that sort of permeates its way through the whole family, because it is a family. It's men and women and children and earners and caretakers and spenders. And, you know, that's essentially is what it is at the base of the thrust of this family drama is what it is, and we're just fighting for the things that are going to make us have the lives we want to live, and no one is going to tell us what that life should or should not be. We make up our own rules. I think that the things that are essentially universal in our code are compelling things: loyalty, sacrifice, etc. So, you know, these are things that are interesting to watch on any level, whether they're fraught with big dynamic or small dynamics. In this instance, because we're outlaws and we kind of are always walking on this tightrope.
So this is, where are you in the first season? How far in are you?
I'm episode 5, I think. They just picked up the guy who has the chronic masturbation
Oh,
problem.
Man, that guy's fantastic. That character, and I forget now, his name is escaping me.
Yeah, I can't.
But it's like Harvey or George, yeah, or, you know, that guy is awesome. I'm not spoiling anything by saying that guy sticks around for a while, because I think they realized the writers must have figured out early on that really he was the grist for the Comedy Mill on that show. This guy who was a compulsive self-pleasurer, who, when they find him, doesn't he have like, do they have, are his fingers taped up, or he's got gloves or something on?
No, they pick him up from, he's been in prison, and they say they'll take care of him, so they pick him up, and all that they're told is, oh, he's got this quirk.
That's right. And
then
just
he's in the car, and they start doing that, and they don't say anything, and then later he's in the clubhouse, and one of the guys like, so what's this thing with your hand in your pants?
Yeah.
He's like, oh, I'm sorry. I've got this problem. He tries to explain, no, it's not that uncommon. I was molested as a child, and Ron Perlman says something like, look, I don't care about your trauma. If you do it again, we're going to put you in a bag and throw you in and lock you in a closet.
No, that guy's awesome. He, I'm fairly certain that he is around all the way through, that he makes several appearances in the second season, and then he actually just, you'll forgive the pun, popped up in the third season as well. So it's as that Sons of Anarchy. So you're, I would imagine, almost halfway done, because I think it's only 13 episodes per season on that show. So, yeah. Now, I envy you watching, like, the next, whatever it is. You got another 19 or so to go before you're caught up.
And I have to say, I never understood in the 80s. I didn't understand the whole Ron Perlman being sexy on the Lady and the Kitty Man show.
Yeah.
You know, that Beauty and the Beast thing. But, you know, with like Hellboy and with him in this role, I mean, he's pretty hot.
Well, he's very masculine. I'll give you that. I mean, he seems like a guy who could, he seems like a guy who could handle things that needed handled.
Get the job done,
seriously,
as you said about Lieutenant Stryker.
Yeah. I mean, that's, you know, if you need somebody who's just absolutely just begging to be taken care of, seems like he might be the guy who could do it. Let's see. I got this email. It says, Rick, you missed the obvious hint earlier. Can't you tell that Dom was just dying to reference a made-up story about camel importing? So there you go. That is the that is in the estimation of one emailer. Is this about Sons of Anarchy? No. No, it is not. All right. Are we still in entertainment news?
Yes,
here?
We are.
All right.
Pearl Jam rocker Eddie Vedder and wed his longtime girlfriend, model Jill McCormick, in Hawaii on Saturday. Among the 70 or so guests, actor Sean Penn, who used Vedder's music in his film Into the Wild, and musician Jack Johnson. Vedder, 45, popped the question last year while he was in Washington, D.C. for the Kennedy Center Honors Gala, where he paid tribute to Bruce Springsteen. The two have two daughters, Olivia, 6, and Harper Moon, who is almost 2. Lindsay Lohan may be back before a judge next week. On her Twitter page, the actress acknowledged that she failed a recent court-ordered drug test. The judge has said any failure while on probation for drunk driving could return her to jail. Stephen Cron, her criminal defense attorney, has worked many high-profile cases. He says her comment that she's working hard to overcome her drug addiction is confusing.
It's a funny turn of events, because UCLA Medical Center said that she was not an addict, and which was kind of a surprise to everybody, and it's a highly respected program.
So this is a guy, when it actually says that he is not her criminal lawyer, he's some guy.
He's just a guy.
That's the code, you know, that is being expressed there, is that he's just some guy who managed to call up, you know, like Fox or CNN or somebody.
Yes, he is not involved in the case, but he says one thing is clear.
Whether she's just doing it because she can't stop, or she wants to show everybody that she's above the system, or exactly what her motives are is unclear, but it is clear that she doesn't seem to be able to follow the rules.
Well, this is the thing that she put on Twitter, where she said, I have an addiction and blah, 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 blah. And yes, it is true that I failed the test, because I guess word of that had already just had leaked out that they found, they wouldn't say what it was, but they said they found at least two substances, if I'm remembering correctly, that she was not, that she was, you know, told she couldn't have. One of them was illegal, and I think one was like a prescription or something that had been, you know, that she had had legally, but that she had been abusing. So it really is just a strange time when people are actually tweeting about what's in their urine. I mean, using like billion-dollar technology to talk about what their pee consists of. It's just an odd world.
I have to admit, every time I start to, I get so tired of Lindsay Lohan, I can't stand her anymore. She does something that actually sort of fascinates me.
Hey, everybody, guess what was in my bladder?
Well, this is where it becomes interesting to me, is that it's positively pathological. Her need to have people talk. talking about her and paying attention to her. Because honestly, most normal people, if you were having some kind of a substance abuse problem, if you had been in trouble with the law, even if you did have some kind of, you know, you were on probation and had been told you couldn't do certain things and there would be mandatory drug tests and you still couldn't control yourself and you still did something and you got caught, I still think that about 99% of people would have the shame, you know, would have the self-respect to not tweet about it, to not tell thousands and thousands of people about it on Twitter that they had failed their drug test.
Wasn't she one of the look at my genitals brigade,
yeah,
though, back in the, you know, 5 or 6 years ago where she was wandering around without undergarments?
Yeah.
I think the shame ship sunk a long time ago with her.
And there is a part of me that, I mean, of all the things about Lindsay Lohan, that is the thing that kind of fascinates me, is this pathological need to have people pay attention to what she's doing, even when it's something that's just terrible and makes her look awful.
Yeah, I think it's maybe like way less surprising to me because, attention whores do what attention whores do. Mm-hmm. And I say that as an attention whore, by the way. I say that as, you know, the guy who's put his name in like 700 different shows in the last 3 months. So I mean, it doesn't really shock me at all because it's not like anybody's going to be talking about, I mean, Machete or not. It's not like people are going to be spending a lot of time talking about her, you know, acting oeuvre, you know, lately. She's not going to be sitting across the table from James Lipton anytime soon. So what are you going to do? You are listening to Legion of News right here at PDX.fm. It seems like I could go the Machete route here in terms of a tie-in, but I won't do that. We'll just say the Castalia Language Center is a language school based in downtown Portland. It's run by a woman named Clara Greville. She is a listener to and supporter of Legion of News here at PDX.fm and of the Emerson News Network. And if you go to PortlandSpanish.com, you can find out more about the Spanish language classes they offer for adults at Castalia Language Center, PortlandSpanish.com. Class sizes are limited to just 8 people, which means you get near individual attention. And it also means you're going to be learning with other adults, learning in the same way, in the same way, the same method that they do. Because, you know, kids and adolescents and adults all learn much differently from one another. So if you had some Spanish language education when you were younger, but you want to brush up, or maybe you're just starting out, they get all different level of classes. They have beginner, intermediate, and advanced. And, of course, they can find something that works with your schedule, different hours and different days. Find out more about them at PortlandSpanish.com. PortlandSpanish.com. That is Castalia Language Center.
And if you're planning on watching the TV tonight, the fall TV season is kicking back into gear with the season premieres finally starting. We've got the season premiere of House tonight at 8 o'clock. There's also a series debut called Lone Star from the creators of Party of Five, which is a nighttime soap opera about Texas oil families.
Did you say that they're doing a sequel series to Dallas?
Is that what this is?
No, well, but
it sounds like Dallas.
Well, what channel is this on?
It's on Fox. Dallas was on ABC.
I don't believe so because I think it's not FX, but it's a channel like that. It's one of those sort of boutique cable channels that I think is actually doing like a full-on Dallas: The Next Generation.
Oh, okay.
They're doing like an actual sequel.
That's not this.
To it. This is. I don't believe. I think this is something entirely separate. I could be wrong. Maybe they ended up changing the name or whatever. But I'm pretty sure that this is. Maybe this could be like how Cruel Intentions 2 ended up being called Manchester Prep. Or not. I mean, who's to say?
Well, I'm very excited about House returning.
Really?
Tonight, I love House.
Really? Tonight, House has a diagnosis. Foreman says, but that'll kill him. And House is proven right at the end.
Yeah, you don't ever want to go to these people, by the way, because they'll almost kill you like 6 times before they figure out what's wrong with you. And in the meantime, they're just talking about their personal problems over your body while you're squirting blood out your eyeballs.
Really? What I've learned by watching House is that there's no problem that can't be solved by playing a Ryan Adams song and then staring out the window plaintively while the camera, shows Cameron sitting alone looking sad.
I just love Hugh Laurie and I love that character.
Like Hugh Laurie, but I think I just realized, I mean, I realized in the first season, I was like, okay, I've seen every episode of the show that's ever going to air. And then I continued to watch for like another 2.5 seasons just to make sure that I was right. And I kept waiting for the moment where they reinvented the show. And then I finally emailed somebody, I think it was like Seamus, and he was like a year and a half ahead of me. And I said, I said, you're like a season and a half ahead of where I am. Should I be investing any more of my time in watching House? And he's just, he emailed back and said, no. And then that was it. So I just got off the train. I mean, it's a great show, and I love you, Lori. It's really well done. But I realized at a certain point I was just watching a more emo version of Matlock or something. So I had to move on.
Also tonight is the series debut of the Hawaii Five-0 reboot starring Daniel Day Kim.
Hooray.
I'll just say right now, I honestly could not care less about that at all. I keep trying to wonder if I should care. And I realize I just don't. I have no interest at all.
No.
But if you are interested in that sort of thing, that's on too. On TV tonight.
Is that the end of entertainment news?
That's the end of entertainment news.
There you go. Fantastic.
And all the other news, too.
Excellent. There you go. Well, let's bring a curtain down on this episode of Legion of News right here at PDX.FM. Legion of News brought to you each and every weekday by PDX.FM and originates from the studios of the Emerson News Network. At the news desk is Don Taylor, advanced technology and magic provided by Thomas Gill, executive producer Bruce Agler, and chief of staff is Cheryl Kanakoa. The Rick Emerson Show begins next at rickemerson.com. This has been another exciting episode of
Legion of News on PDX.FM.
The proceeding was a production of the Emerson News Network.